begin.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language.
You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
Yeah, I'm back.
Welcome back to Discourse. I'm Morgan Nickel, big mouth dickhead from the internet.
I'm Dylan Rave, innocent until proven guilty.
And I'm Ben Gracewood. I'm in the house.
In the gazelles.
In the house.
Up here back, in the penthouse.
Back in the studio.
It's
all the way to Studio 1A.
Your Skype's kind of, it's kind of gone to bit to shit, Dills.
I'm sorry about that. It's your fault.
What? Your how is it my like, fault?
Shall I disconnect and call back?
You should just not talk at all for the whole rest of the show. How about that? So this morning, I don't know about everyone else, but sometimes when I wake up in the morning, I wake up and I just think, I'm feeling really good. Like, very often when I wake up, I'm like, I'm tired, I want to sleep some more. Where's the snooze button? But sometimes I'm like, I'm feeling really good. Today, though, I woke up and this is what I thought. I'm feeling pie. That was that's my good. First thought in the morning. And then I was like, you know, that's all right. You know, you imagine in the back of your head, that perfect pie with the really flaky pastry and like the perfect ratio of gravy to whatever the filling is. I often think back to the Mount Eden Bakery they had. They may still exist. They had a Thai chicken pie. Very very positive memories, that one for me. So I'm feeling pie. I hope everyone else is feeling pie as well.
I feel like sandwich.
Big sandwich.
No, just a little one.
Mm.
I'm feeling pie, but I'm not a fan of the fringe pie.
No,
the chicken curry pie and the sort of stuff. No,
I'm stuff.
No,
you're just a steak and kidney man.
Steak and cheese, mince.
You put cheese in your pie.
Yeah,
you like some flash big city boy.
No, I'm all about the pure pie.
Yeah, pure as bro. Yeah. Have you ever had a shark pie?
No,
me neither. I don't know if they exist. I'm sure they exist somewhere. You know, there's probably actually a shark pie competition. I imagine there's a grandmother who's really famous in the family for a shark pie.
Fish pie.
Fish. I wouldn't say that about anyone's grandmother. Ben, you've gone over the line. Don't make us put you in the timeout again. What listeners may not be aware of is that Ben has been off the show because he's been in the dog box. That's right. He was banned for 17 episodes.
For being
busy. So this week on the show, no shark pies, but we do have some actual sharks. And by actual sharks, I mean literal sharks. That's not appropriate. I shouldn't be talking like that. I'm extremely rude.
Why did I not expect that? Dawn Morgan.
It's Lawyer Week on Discourse. And we're joined via Skype. Hopefully the connection will straighten up again. It was beautiful before, but we're joined by Rick Scherer. He's an awesome lawyer, and he's a partner at Lowndes Jordan.
A shark. Thank you.
And a shark, definitely a shark. From reading your profile on the site, corporate and commercial law, but with a focus on ICT, IP law and media law. And so there's a whole lot of stories that we can talk about, and really it's just a matter of narrowing down.
I thought Shark Week is where
we talk about them every week.
Yeah.
We talk about them every week anyway, but we don't know what we're talking about. That's the general problem.
Mm.
Well, let's continue with that then.
All right, I'm
talk about what we don't know, and you can correct us.
Yeah. The call quality is so bad. Actually, I'm gonna kill both of you guys, and we'll get you back. And while that's happening, we can go ahead and thank and congratulate Chris Peel. He went unnamed last week. Chris Peel, who had the winning 48 hours prize. Competition. His team, Monkeys with Alopecia. Call group. What do you think? Do you think that'll do it?
Give it a crack.
I think Dylan didn't kill the group. So let's see what that sounds like now.
I'm here.
Hello.
Oh, that's much better. Listen to the hit.
Wonderful.
Beautiful.
Well, you're just the same as you were before.
You guys are wonderful.
Yeah, you're in.
Okay. So I was going to say, Morgan, in Shark Week on Discovery Channel, we learn all about sharks and their natural environment.
Yeah.
You know, sharks as predators, what their prey are.
Yeah.
So with Lawyer Week, we should ask, you know, who's your natural...
objection.
Your natural enemy.
Natural prey.
Our natural prey.
Yeah.
Our clients.
It's obviously not true.
Delicious billables. Yum.
Yeah, absolutely.
Actually, I didn't discuss this with you, Morgan. Rick said he was going to be billing you for this time. That's all right, eh?
And 7-minute increments, or what are we down to now?
Six. We're only on 6 minutes. Although there are 28 hours in a day.
Oh, crap. this is going to bankrupt the show. Dylan, I hope you know what you've done.
Sponsors.
I'm sure it'll work out well.
I'm sure we'll come to some arrangement.
So there's nothing in sort of IP law space happening in New Zealand at the moment? Surely not. There's not like a big cyber criminal?
Just down the road from me? No.
Cyborg.
But you live just down the road from Mr.com, Rick?
Yes, I was driving past on the day that all the action all happened.
It seems to me
didn't feel tempted to stop the car and run in?
I did stop the car, and I thought, I'd actually heard from a friend of mine who lives even closer that he was in the Caribbean. So when I saw the story online in the morning, I thought, can't be that, when I saw the plain, unmarked police car at one of the entrances. And then I thought, well, maybe I'll just zip round to the front entrance, and there, of course, it all was.
Wow. So it seems since all the action, like you say, things have kind of, to my mind, to my view, to what's been reported, have kind of rolled back in increments over time. So it's almost like everything was all on and he was in jail and everything was seized, but the layers have peeled back and he's been given more access and less jail time. And do you think it's coming apart at the seams, or is this just the way these things normally naturally progress?
I think it is. Well, it's hard to say in this case because it's so novel. I mean, we haven't had anything like this, anywhere near this in New Zealand or indeed in other parts of the world. So we're all learning here. And I think, you know, if you're going to go in gung-ho like they all did, you go in as hard as you can at the start, perhaps with the knowledge that they might be pushed back a little bit, and that's what's happened. Yeah. And you've got Judge Harvey sitting there who's hearing all these interlocutory applications for, you know, for more money and for giving him his internet access back and so on. So you've got a judge there who's probably amenable to a fairly balanced view of copyright.
So can I express my conspiracy theory about this?
Go ahead.
That I've been thinking about it, and I don't think it's about Kim.com, and I don't even think it's really about... I think they want to destroy the site, and so they've effectively done so, and I think the only thing they want to do now is get to that point where they've deleted all the data and the site can't start up again.
Are you about to steal my joke?
I don't know. What's your joke?
Well, that's something we were discussing the other night at dinner.
Oh, yeah, yes. Yeah, well, your conspiracy theory went a step further than mine, and I like yours.
Go on, then.
Well, no, you deliver yours.
God, your Skype is sounding really good now, Dylan. I've got to tell you.
Take it all down.
It feels like you're in the room.
The reason I think they took them down was that now we know, it's been confirmed that US government people had a whole bunch of files up there and lost a lot. We've had reports of FBI files and a whole, you know, other departments and divisions. And I suspect that there was something on there that they were afraid of getting out. So it's like a WikiLeaks thing, but maybe even bigger. And this whole thing with the IP stuff is just a complete smokescreen, and it's exclusively about getting rid of whatever those embarrassing files were, those state secrets, those photos of Monica and whatever Obama's wife's name is, getting it on. I don't know. Of course, obviously, I don't know what the secrets were that they were afraid would be revealed.
Probably Obama's original birth certificate.
Yeah.
Or even just the embarrassment of government departments in the US keeping something on mega upload.
Exactly. Hey, do we know where were the servers housed? Because I it is interesting that theory about taking it down. They would have done, you know, if they could do the same thing as the Pirate Bay, they would. They've tried lots of times that they keep sort of just basically changing domain name providers.
Weirdly, the servers were in the US. Yeah. That seems strange to me.
So that seems like the easiest part of it, really, isn't it?
That's what gave them the opportunity to go to Carpathia, who's the web host and the server provider, and seize the servers.
Hmm. And then just stop paying.
There's a lesson there for someone.
So well, it seems if you're running a business that's maybe slightly quasi-legal, and there's no question that, at least I don't think there's any question that the mega upload people had some idea of what their business was largely being used for by many people.
So
why would you host those servers in the States?
YouTube do, and YouTube know their system's being used for quasi-legal stuff.
Good point.
We've got a question for you, Rick, from the chat room. And the question is from Brendan RS. He wants to know if it was chance that David Harvey got the case or whether he asked for it. I mean, how do judges get cases in New Zealand along these lines?
The theory is that any judge can be assigned to any particular type of issue. So, you know, you could have a judge 1 minute hearing a criminal case and the next minute hearing a high-level complex securities and capital-raising case. However, having said that, in certain areas, there does tend to be an allocation to a judge who's going to understand things better than some other judges. And Judge Harvey, obviously, is New Zealand's most internet-savvy jurist. I don't know whether he actually asked for the case, but it's not too far of a leap to expect that everyone agreed that he would be the best person to hear it.
Yeah.
I think that that speaks well of the, you know, at least it's being treated well in the New Zealand kind of system, because, you know, the kind of grand jury approach in the States is a little bit different, isn't it?
Well, we've certainly seen that today in the Oracle and Google case where the grand jury couldn't even reach a decision, so it kicked it for touch.
I don't really understand that. Why? Like, it seems to me that on matters of what is essentially very specific legal points, like, it doesn't seem like a jury is the best.
Yeah, it is a bit strange, although parts of the case in the Google and Oracle case are, you know, fact-based. So the theory is that the jury will hear the factual issues and the judge will rule on the law. Although it seems a very strange thing looking at it from a New Zealand perspective to have a jury sitting there and trying to decide whether something is fair use or not.
Yeah.
Crazy, in fact.
So how long do we continue the farce of the trial when, according to the US judge on their end of it, saying that he expects that the trial will or at least may never happen, and that, you know, the way things are being filed is not correct, and that the nature of the alleged infringement is such that charges can possibly never be filed because they can't be filed against corporations and so on. I mean, so how long, given that, how long do we continue spending money and, you know, putting the dot-com family through this and the other people who are also facing charges, how long do we continue with this farce?
Well, until I would expect someone or other runs out of steam or money, whichever comes first. I mean, there are two concurrent cases in effect, because you've got the US case, which obviously they would like to have .com there and facing up to the music, to excuse the pun. But they don't necessarily have to have that. I mean, there are plenty of cases, some fairly notorious cases in recent times, where the US authorities have taken action in a similar sort of way against foreign websites or foreign website owners without even the website owners knowing about it, and certainly without them being represented. So they could continue on in the US in that vein. Whether or not they can take criminal action against the company, I don't know. It can be difficult, but not necessarily impossible. And then there's the concurrent case here in New Zealand about the extradition, which is, in a sense, a completely different issue.
Yeah.
It comes back down to the copyright and whether we have a similar copyright law and whether that means that it's serious enough for him to be extradited. But that's a separate issue and could run, you know, that case could well run all the way to the Supreme Court. We've certainly never had a situation in New Zealand where copyright law has been the basis for extradition. Mm-hmm. So provided .com can keep garnering money out of his various accounts with the permission of the court, then I would expect him to keep running it.
Yeah,
I was going to say, Rick, I don't know how much you know about kind of extradition law, but do they have to prove, they don't have to prove his guilt, they just have to prove that he has a case to face in the US, is that right?
What they have to prove is that the allegations which were made in the indictment in the US would, if they were true, be an offence or a serious offence here in New Zealand.
Right, so they don't actually have to prove that
they don't have to prove the truth of them. In fact, there's some argument around how much they even get to see the evidence that the US supposedly has here in New Zealand. But putting that to one side, they certainly don't have to prove that the allegations are true. The fact that the allegations have been made and look as though they're justifiable to paraphrase it, means that you then go on to the stage of saying, well, would those allegations constitute a crime here in New Zealand?
Yeah.
And which, the underlying one is that it's got to be a copyright crime.
Which makes me really, it does make me really interested, though, that they did charge him also with money laundering, and that Janet Napolitano just visited to have a chat about cross-border crimes, including money laundering. I was wondering how interesting that timing was. You know, that it was under the guise of Homeland Security and terrorism, but crikey, it was good timing.
Yes, I happened to be in the hotel where they were all swarming around down in Wellington. We were, funnily enough, we were at a privacy conference, and to have all of the Secret Service there with their clutching their ears and wandering around in their plain grey suits was quite amusing.
Isn't it weird how they look exactly like they do in the movies? It's so strange.
Yeah. One of them was a dead spurt for Clint Eastwood.
There's been some great photos I've seen recently of like politicians at basketball games. There was one of Obama who dropped into a notorious student bar when he was visiting, doing a speech on campus. And there's all these students running around getting photos of him, and just the guys in the background. You have to admire their, the way they can just stand there and look so tough and so unmoved when stuff's going on around them. It's great.
Yeah, imagine the New Zealand police doing the same job. Everyone would get shot at least 14 times.
Oh, no. Have you seen the diplomatic protection guys up close? They're a bit similar. You can tell they're modelling themselves on the Secret Service.
They're pretty tough.
But they do crack a smile from time to time.
That's just unprofessional. Just crack heads, not smiles. My perception, Rick, is that taking a little bit of a sidestep from the Kim.com thing. So we've got things like the AFACT case against iiNet that's just been thrown out, dismissed.
Yep.
We've got TPPA stuff. Before that, we had ACTA and, you know, maybe again, and, you know, various other of these new magical laws that apparently we desperately need. But to me, it seems that certainly in movies, TV, books, we're in an absolute golden age with creators making more than they ever have before. Maybe with music, that's not the case. Not with recorded music, anyway. But so where? I mean, I just don't understand what they're still even lobbying for. I don't understand why the people like AFACT and what are they called here? RIA here? No, what are they called?
RIA. We have an NZFACT here, the New Zealand Federation Against Copyright Theft.
But so, I mean, what is the argument even about? We've just had the biggest movie ever released. The Avengers has been out for, you know, in the world for like 10 days. It's made $640 million. It had the biggest opening weekend of any movie ever. They made $200 million in the weekend. So, I mean, is anyone in NZFACT or AFACT, are they representing the film industry? Because if they are, they should shut the hell up. They don't need any new laws. They must be making more money now than they've ever made before. So what is the problem?
Well, if you have there's been quite an interesting study done, which is online, called The Sky is Rising, which is a study done of publicly available information, but they collated all the information and took a look at what had happened to the four main copyright-reliant content industries, so film, music, games, and books. And in all cases, the revenue and the profits had really gone up over the last, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 years substantially. You know, at a time when most of the world and most of us are looking at flatlined revenue and growth, these industries have actually improved substantially. So it really is quite ironic that you would have people coming along and saying, for example, in the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement negotiations, that we need longer, stronger, deeper, harder, faster, more restrictive copyright to encourage creativity.
It's it's bizarre. I don't know. Something's coming to mind. I think it might have been something on one of the NZ lists where there was basically a conversation or some research from these companies talking about Pirate A and Pirate B, and one of the two was me. You know, 30-something, affluent, has money to burn on content, but is choosing to pirate because of its convenience. And Pirate B is someone who doesn't have the money to buy the stuff. There's no point pursuing them, but they, you know, the thing is they're pursuing me and you, Morgan, and Rick and Dylan for the money that we're not spending that we could spend on content. And it seems bizarre when wouldn't it be easier to just take that money from me that I'm trying to give them by giving me the content when and where I want it?
It's all about protecting business models. And, I mean, the record industry, especially in the film industry as well, their whole business model is built around being middlemen. And I think as they start to see a threat from people sort of doing things themselves and distributing themselves, you know, you look at Louis C.K., we've talked about doing his stand-up
homebrew crew,
selling it directly. I think there's that. There's a threat they see from there, and there's a threat they see in not being able to control the distribution model the way they used to, so that they just try and shut everything down so that they can continue to be the middleman.
I think there is a place for middlemen. I mean, I don't think you're going to find that in any of these industries everyone is going to be sitting there in their home studio and producing music and marketing it and doing everything else that needs to be done. So there is a place for that, but I think the traditional middlemen, if you want to put it that way, the traditional, what might call the legacy industries, have really struggled and are continuing to struggle with how they become a new type of middleman, someone who's more permissive, more agile, and more capable of actually assisting people who want to do it themselves, rather than locking them into your traditional publishing contracts or film contracts or music contracts.
Yeah.
You know, there's one way around them. There's a lot of ways around the middlemen, of course. I mean, there's a few ways around it. One that interests me this week is Fyx, FYX.
It was today, wasn't it?
Yeah, today. From Maxnet, fyx.co.nz. Yeah. So I suppose you're the person to talk to, Rick, but this is for the listeners.
Well, I look at that with interest. I have a number of people who have fingers in all sorts of sides of that pie.
Okay.
So I can't really talk too much about it other than to say that it's
the mechanics of it.
I think it's a pretty good development.
Yeah.
It works, I don't know, but it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, so just in case anyone doesn't know, fyx.co.nz, a new ISP with reasonably good charges on data, but the key thing is they allow you to enable a global mode, which, as I understand it, is a ISP level VPN slash.
Basically, as far as I can gather, you switch your DNS servers, which will probably then resolve different addresses for certain sites and route you differently to those sites. Yeah. So that if you go to Hulu.com with global mode enabled, you'll turn up at Hulu coming from some US address.
So, Rick, I mean, can you comment on the mechanics of it and the legal mechanics? So I guess it seems like you're violating terms of service by doing this of the
providers. I'm not sure whether you are or aren't, and I'm sort of being a bit careful there, but I saw on the Stuff site today where the story was reported, there were some comments there, including one from someone who had quoted, I think it was the Hulu terms, which did appear to say that you can't use a process of trying to get around a geographical block. So it may well be a breach of the terms of Hulu's terms of use. The question then becomes, well, what would Hulu do about it?
I was going to say, is it even enforceable? I mean, if you break terms of use and you're not in the jurisdiction, is that enforceable?
Well, there are jurisdictional issues. There are issues around what real damage is being suffered by anyone, given that the people are paying just the same amount that the people in the US would be paying, because the service would assume that they're from the US.
I guess the risk is that Hulu and Netflix won't ever get their content cut off by the people that are providing them content.
Yeah, ultimately, I guess there are arrangements between them and the content providers, and if the content providers saw that their jurisdictionally based distribution model, which enables them to charge different prices in different places and release different times or not at all in different places, was being undermined, that they might turn the tap off. Although, hard to see that where someone like Netflix must be providing them with a pretty good revenue stream, I would have thought.
Says here from Hulu's terms, using technologies to access the content from territories where Hulu does not have rights or does not offer services is prohibited. So that's
that doesn't necessarily mean that they don't want you to do it. That might be some boilerplate they have to include because their license with their suppliers says that they have to say it. Doesn't necessarily mean they'll be motivated to do anything about it.
If someone's paying Hulu for the service, what they're going to do about it. And there are plenty of situations where someone will complain to an ISP or an online service provider, hey, so-and-so is breaching your terms. They're being abusive of me online. You need to terminate their account. doesn't actually often happen that much.
No.
Yeah.
So now things that haven't happened often, also this is something else that I want to just check with you about. Things that haven't happened often is people making it to their third strike under our new copyright laws. Is there a strategy at play with the types of content that are being notified, are being complained about? It seems bizarre to me, incomprehensible.
If there is, I can't follow it.
Because it would make sense. You don't need to be a complete friggin' rocket surgeon to know that making complaints about Split Ends or, you know, Anika Moa or whoever would probably make more sense and get better PR value than making complaints about, you know, stupid American pop artists.
Yeah, I mean, there's two aspects of it that seem strange to me. First of all, you're not seeing anything from the film or TV industry at all. So NZ Fact, which is the organisation that would be doing that here in New Zealand and has been one of the strongest proponents of the new law, is not using it.
Yeah.
And secondly, Rianne's, who is using it and who is proud of the fact that they're an independent organisation set up to protect New Zealand artists and New Zealand recording companies, independents, seem to have made a decision to only file in respect of overseas artists.
I presume it's because
I don't understand it at all.
I'm guessing it's because their feeds from Media Century and all those, you know, whoever the systems are that are finding stuff, don't include any New Zealand content, so they don't have the ability to find it.
Well, I also think that it's probably...
Well, I would have thought that they could find it if they wanted. I mean, the service that they use presumably can target, you know, if they're going out into the swarm to find shared music, they can presumably target hashtag New Zealand music.
Mm. I believe that they probably, in terms of why it's not from the film and television industry, I reckon the recording industry can probably bill their artists for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I reckon they recover their costs, which is why NZ Fact is trying so hard to get the cost reduced, because they probably don't have that mechanism.
Yeah.
Hey. But I'm pretty certain the recording industry, the RIANZ and RIAA and associated people can actually bill their artists, you know, against royalties for the cost of enforcement.
We talked about covers before, and Rick, hypothetically, if I was in a really, really popular three-part rap band, you know, based out of Brooklyn, and my bassist died... No, Brooklyn. And my bassist died.
Straight out of Coatesville.
And my and then, you know, the next day, Coldplay were playing a concert and played a cover of one of our tunes as tribute to my dead bassist. Would they need a license to do that?
Yes. In a song, there are a number of different copyrights depending on what part of the song or what aspect of it you're using. So there'll always be the actual compilation, the underlying compilation, the lyrics, the actual performance of it, potentially the recording, the master recording, and so on. So depending on what aspect of the song you're using, you may need one or more or several licenses.
So what you're saying is not only was Coldplay's cover of the Beastie Boys' Fight for Your Right to Party absolutely terrible, it was also illegal.
Look, Rick, I'm going to handle this one. Number one, it was really good.
It was
clearly heartfelt. It was a simple performance of it on the piano and voice. And number two, they would have just paid.
Yeah.
Their hearts were in the right place, but
I mean, the worst cover I've ever heard.
Oh, sorry, bullshit!
Sorry to interrupt your artistic differences here, but this is meant to be legal, not artistic differences. The interesting example of that, of course, is the Kookaburra and Men at Work Down Under.
Yeah,
that seemed insane.
Australia, which is, you know, Kookaburra, the classic and much loved folk tune from Australia, has four bars in it.
Yeah,
and Greg Hamm, the flautist with Men at Work, copied one bar in what was a clear parody with them sitting in a tree and parodying it. But because Australia didn't have parody and satire law at that stage, it was a problem, and they got pinged for copyright infringement. And tragically, it would appear that Greg Hamm, it destroyed Greg Hamm's life.
Yeah.
You know, if the stories that we hear on the media are correct, it really did affect him.
Well, he lost his house, right? His family broke up. He started abusing drugs, and then I believe he killed himself, right? Just months ago, he killed himself.
Only fairly recently. So certainly, the interesting thing about that was that it was held to be a copyright infringement, and then when they came to decide what the damages was going to be, originally there was a fairly substantial damages award, and that was reduced substantially, with the judge in the end saying, well, it didn't really sound very similar, and it wasn't that similar, so I'm going to reduce it to a low figure, which begs the question as to whether it was a copyright infringement at all.
Yeah, how about you reduce it to nothing? And, yeah, I mean, who is the beneficiary? The person that allegedly composed it has been dead how long?
Yeah, exactly. It's isn't a...
it's a copyright troll who bought the music and then decided to sue.
Yeah. I think the whole thing is disgusting. And we need sharks on our own sides. to change these things, yeah. Sharks with frickin' lasers.
Yeah.
Sharks for the side of good. Okay, what are we going to... Are we going to do some news? Getting on to the show now.
Yeah, well, I mean, on our side, I mean, if we want to take a really obtuse segue into the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, we've... luckily enough, we have our own officials in the Ministry of Economic Development who are on our side in terms of saying, well... Our copyright law at the moment is quite good enough, thank you very much. We don't want to extend it.
Well, that's good, because, I mean, didn't we... I feel a bit embarrassed that we signed up to ACTA after, what's been going on with people who have been studying it properly and saying it's appalling.
And what's happened in Europe.
Yeah.
I mean, ACTA, in terms of the intellectual property side of things, isn't actually too much different, or it's hardly different at all from our own intellectual property. So once they took out all the most egregious things out of ACTA, it really did dilute it down. There are some aspects of it that are still cause some angst, particularly in Europe, but probably wouldn't be quite so bad here. But it looks as though it's a dead duck. The Europeans seem to be saying we're not going to sign it, so presumably our response to that will be we've signed it, but we won't implement it.
Yeah. The thing that
I pretty much par for the course is what the US do. They sign things and never implement.
Yeah. So, I mean, sign it or not, though, the most offensive thing to me about a lot of these recent negotiations is that they've been secret. It's that these people are trying to pass, they're trying to arrange laws under which we will have to live. And we're not allowed to know about them until, we kick up a huge stink. I don't understand how we can live in a ostensibly open democracy in which, you can have secret pacts about something as trivial. I mean, with nuclear stuff, with like starting wars and stuff, that is a different matter. But in this case, it's
pokies and convention centres, that's important.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's bullshit as well, obviously. But I mean, something like this, it seems so trivial. It's just fucking music and movies. That's all it is. And, obviously there's some counterfeiting stuff in there. So it's handbags as well. Fucking deal. It's handbags and CDs. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not one who would say that every single international negotiation has to be held in public because, our officials are trying to negotiate this thing and to disclose some of our positions and so on in the international arena might actually be detrimental to what we want. So it's sort of throwing the baby out with the bathwater. But at some stage, when you're getting along the track towards, I think this might be the agreement that we're possibly going to reach, or at least it's the position that we would like to have, that's the time for disclosure. And we must have reached that already. I mean, it's quite clear that there's been quite a lot of progress along the way.
Yeah.
So we should be disclosing it.
Yeah. Now, a question about the TPPA, and this is about, if we sign a treaty, does it need to be implemented? So the question from the chat room essentially boils down to, signing a treaty, surely that's not enough, and we would have to pass some kind of legislation. And so surely that would follow the normal select committee and so on process.
The problem with it is that, to take ACTA, for example, it went through cabinet two or three times. So by the time that we got to agree it and sign it, it was cabinet and ipso facto government policy given the numbers. So to suggest that on the implementation side, when the agreement's signed and it comes back down and it's put into a, would it be put into a bill? The bill would be presented to select committee and we all have our chance to make comment on it.
Yeah.
But at that stage, you know full well that you're only going to be tweaking around the edges, because the choice is really tweak something that's not material to the actual agreement that's already been signed, or chuck it out completely.
Yeah.
And chucking it out completely is not going to happen because it's already government policy,
yeah,
or cabinet policy. So I think that the model in which these things are put in place is flawed. And we clearly, you know, you've clearly seen that in the active process when, and even just taking my or our tin hat off for a moment, there are people around who on all aspects of ACTA and more importantly TPP, which has a lot more than just intellectual property in it, have some expert things to say and could contribute for the good of the agreement, even if you, whether you agree with the agreement or not, let's assume that there is going to be some form of agreement, then there are people who can contribute and make it a better agreement for all involved. Yet those people are not allowed to have any input until the select committee stage when, as I say, it's too late.
Yeah. Well, we can never let it be too late, I guess. I mean, we can always kick up a fuss even once things have been, you know, seem to have gone.
We can, and I mean, hopefully we can side or ally ourselves with other countries in this, in TPP. Unfortunately, Europe, which is the source of most of the leaks, was with ACTA, isn't involved. So the chances of leaks are much less. And as I understand it, the US is pushing hard for all of the future negotiation of TPP to be held in the US.
Right.
So we'll have even less chance.
But some of our civil servants sure will get a lot of air miles.
Yes. Yeah,
good for them. Okay, guys.
I mean, the TPP, I'm not necessarily against trade agreements. Some people are, some people aren't. It's your personal view. But certainly the intellectual property provisions of TPP are a shocker.
Yep.
You know, for New Zealanders, even people who know very little about intellectual property would throw up their hands in horror at the idea that the US wants us to get rid of parallel importing.
Yeah.
Or that the US wants to make it a criminal offence to take a DVD out of US Zone 1 and be able to use it in New Zealand.
Yeah.
I mean, those sorts of things just seem ludicrous to us.
Yeah. I mean,
are the sorts of things that are proposed.
It seems ludicrous to me. A couple of weeks ago, the girlfriend brought home a DVD and we were going to watch it, and we realised we didn't have a DVD player under the TV. And then I was like, well, I'll put it in the computer and I'll rip it. And then I realised I didn't have a DVD drive in the computer either. So I was like, how do I watch this legally purchased movie? How do
I
watch it?
Which reminds me of a very funny thing I saw online the other day, which was quite amusing, I thought, was that the Intellectual Property Office of New Zealand came out with a nice guidance note for, or primarily for lawyers and for others using their service, to say that that they would accept CDs as well as diskettes, 3.5-inch diskettes.
When's the last time you were even able to write one?
I was gutted that they wouldn't accept my 8-inch.
Oh, cocky.
Because, I mean, I think a lot of people don't realise, and it's a real shocker when you mention it to people, that DVD ripping is illegal. Yeah. CD ripping is not illegal. DVD ripping is illegal in New Zealand.
That's right.
Format shifting. It's bizarre.
Keeping recordings of TV on a VHS for too long is illegal.
You only have to hark back to 2008 when we brought the new technologically adept law in, and the Select Committee, or the Select Committee report, which came back to say, well, in respect of format shifting, we don't think really that there's any need for the exception to extend to film and TV because people aren't really doing that at the moment.
That's bizarre.
That's good. We should only write laws. We should only correct laws for things that people are already doing against the law.
Yeah.
Don't just have a principle and ignore their technology because, you know, why would you want to do that?
Should we move on and do it?
We'll have our chance in 2013 because it's 5 years since 2008 and the Copyright Act is up for on a 5-year revolving review.
I think it's real fresh.
All of those provisions are up for review again next year.
Yeah. So we're going to have to get on to some news now. I've got a question for you. Is it illegal for me to badmouth someone who's dead, who's died?
Well, there is no defamation of dead people, put it that way.
Excellent. Bert Potter died. Good fucking riddance. He was a child rapist for years. He spent years in jail and he's just died. Fuck him. That's it. Thank you. So that's Bert Potter's passing, and that's the first and last time he's He'll be mentioned, fucking scumbag. There's a group of at least 40 of his victims who were children when he raped them, and managed to somehow, through his potty fucking charisma, convince other adults to rape children. There are 40 of them who've come forward to make complaints.
Some of whom may not be dead.
The ones who've made complaints or the ones who've done the raping? Yeah, no, certainly some of the others who did the raping aren't dead. Certainly.
There could be running a fine line then.
Yeah.
No, except a bunch of these people were convicted and sentenced. There were at least five other men, according to this article I'm seeing from the Herald, five other men were convicted on charges of indecently assaulting minors, sexually assaulting minors, and attempted rape of a minor. And I don't know what the distinction here is between indecently assaulting and raping. But I say that all these motherfuckers are rapists. And good riddance when they die as well. But Bert Potter's gone. Congratulations, hooray. Celebrate. Because he cannot rape any more children now.
Well put.
So in other news, the driver's driving license.
Rick, I was just going to say, Rick, you can stay with us, or if you want to head off, that's totally fine.
No, I'm right.
Okay. The driving license pass rate has plummeted, which is also excellent news. Recently, a couple of months ago, the driver's license process was changed. Previously, there was something like 80% pass rate. Now it's plummeted to 41%, and I couldn't be happier with this news.
What have they changed to make it so much harder? Is it no longer the scratch and sniff tests? Or?
I don't know. I don't know.
They've tried to standardise some things or something, because it used to be that it was a bit subjective, I believe. Yeah. Where you did it and how it was done was a bit subjective.
This is the restricted licence test, which I believe is the first one that requires an actual driving test, demonstration. And so that part I think they could easily make much more difficult. Andy Nackstead, excellent name, has said that learner drivers now need to have 120 hours practice under their belt before sitting the test. I don't know if that is a requirement or if it's just a recommendation, because if you haven't got that, you won't be good enough. But in either case, I didn't have anything like that. I never failed any of my driving tests, and I usually kind of half-assed it. And so the system was too easy. New Zealand drivers suck. Anything that makes New Zealand drivers fractionally better, I welcome it with open arms.
Good. I think as a newfound renewed cyclist that we should introduce that Amsterdam law that finds drivers at fault by default in cycle accidents.
Oh, so the driver is always assumed to be at fault?
Yep, just like rear-end accidents at the moment. You know, you can obviously...
Oh, I hate having a rear-end accident. You get in so much trouble.
Exactly. You know, so there are cases...
That's really uncomfortable.
So there are cases in a rear-end accident where you may not be at fault, but most of the time you're at fault, right?
Yeah.
Morgan's always at fault.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, going back to this Bert Potter thing, David Farrar, it's almost the only time he's ever been, you know, pretty close to right about anything. He posted a link to the Herald article that I read from earlier. He said, they say if you can't say something nice about someone who has died, don't say anything at all. So, and that was pretty much the end of the post. So there you go. Good for you, David Farrar. You're right, but you're also a pussy. You could have said something actually about him. You don't have to say only nice things. I've just established that with a lawyer. Do you know who else we don't have to say nice things about? Lachlan Kelly Tomare. I've just butchered his name, I apologise. 19 years old, he's also dead. As far as I know.
At the moment is my beep waiver. Nothing should be taken as legal advice.
You are a lawyer, but you are not our lawyer.
That's right.
Now, this guy.
Anyone listening to this as well?
This story is hard to know exactly what's going on, because we've only heard the police side so far, and they seem to be less reliable than they once seemed. So he was shot at 14 times by a police officer. He was hit a bunch of times in the abdomen, in the leg, and even in the foot. Very, very clever. The thing is, though, and the first time I heard about this, it was from Bommen. He was like, the police have gone cowboy on blah, blah, blah. It turns out, well, according to the police account, which was at least four separate officers, he pulled a shotgun on them. So there's no fucking surprise he got shot.
Yeah, I think, fair enough. If you pull a shotgun, you're going to get shot. But 14 times, to me, smacks of bad shooting.
It does smack of bad shooting. It also seems a bit excessive. Apparently, though, the whole incident from start to finish, from him presenting the firearm, or even actually from him getting out of his car, to the last shot being fired, was a total of about 28 seconds. So it was pretty quick. If I saw someone pointing a shotgun at me, you'd be bloody right I'd shoot at them, and probably I wouldn't be a very good shot at it. And so yeah, I'd fire everything I had.
The officer involved probably should have had more training, because they shouldn't need to shoot that many times to, you know, neutralise a suspect.
He fired every shot he had, right? I mean, that's all of his bullets.
14, that'd be pretty much a clip, I'd say.
45 minutes.
But do you remember a long time ago, well, probably not that long ago, maybe 10 years, there was an incident, maybe in Helensville or somewhere, where a guy got out of a car and pointed an imitation Glock at police and got shot.
Yeah, what an idiot.
It's really simple. Don't point guns at the cops.
Just don't do it. Don't point guns at anyone. And that goes for the police as well. They shouldn't point guns at people if they don't need to, ideally.
It's unfortunate for all involved that it happened, but man, terrible.
We've been told off in the chat room. It's called a magazine, not a clip, Dylan. Actually, so we've got literal internet correcting us now.
I think clip is a valid term.
It's the vernacular.
I have a quote from DevOps Borat, who is a great Twitter account. He's a Borat styled DevOps person, and he says, "To make error is human. To propagate error to all server in automatic way is DevOps." And I thought that was an appropriate tweet to segue into Peter Dunn's apology for the IRD being offline for a day. he tweeted. I haven't got the quote, but he effectively tweeted that he's been told from his sources, because he is the Minister for Revenue, I presume, Minister for IRD in charge, that it was simply an incorrect setting, and that wasn't good enough, but it was just a setting that took the IRD down for a day.
Mm. What sort of setting would that be?
it's the take the servers down for a day setting, I presume. They must have switched that to on.
The nothing works today button.
They must have been doing, I mean, to me, they must have been doing a deployment with a bad setting in it, at the very least.
Mm.
You find it a quote, Morgan?
Yeah, I was going to find it. I'm really glad that I don't currently have to do any GST returns and so on, because I would consistently leave it till the last possible day, just because it's my style. This would have given me the shits. Would have been terrifying.
How do they? Yeah, I mean, if you're going to do a deploy, don't do it on the day before GST is due.
Well, we're just guessing, really. We don't know what it is. There may be a don't make this the site doesn't work setting.
So did you just admit to nearly reaving your tax return, Dylan?
No, I did. I did the last one, totally. I'm not doing GST anymore. I don't need to, but for a little while I was.
Is that because you've been struck off the register? You're no longer allowed to be a director because you consistently return your tax returns late?
No, I'm a wage earner again. I'm no longer invoicing.
Oh, you're not a contractor. You're not self-employed with your own little thing anymore. No, I can't blame you, though. The new thing, I don't know if we've ever spoken about, is pretty cool. You know what else is really cool? You remember there was that tsunami in Japan? That was not cool. That sucked. That was awful. But what is cool is that one tsunami survivor's Harley-Davidson motorcycle that was washed away in the tsunami has been found on the beach in Canada. And there's a beautiful photo of it, half buried in the sand. And they're pulling it out, and there's a motorcycle shop in Japan which is going to restore it for him, which is pretty friggin' great. I'm really delighted about this story, actually. Shame about all the dead people. That's pretty terrible. Hopefully none of them will wash up. Or maybe it would be a good thing if they did. I don't know. Closure for the families? I'm not sure.
Do you think it's actually much to restore? I mean, if the frame's been in the sea for 6 months.
And it is a Harley. It's like the pinnacle of American engineering. It's made of iron.
It's made of steel. Yeah.
The shock absorbers are bits of wood.
Hey, Dylan was talking about invoicing and GST and tax and stuff. And how he couldn't do it. Do you know who else can't do tax?
Who's that?
Bill English.
Oh, that would be tough, because isn't he the minister of whatever, minister of finance?
Well, you know, when it comes to National and Bill English, it's what's that famous quote? Another day older and deeper in debt. Mm. £16.
I know another famous quote. Show me the money. Show me the money. Mr. Gough, I only have one question for you. Show me the money.
So $1.6 billion out the back door money.
These scumbags.
No, they're not scumbags. Look.
They are scumbags. They're liars. They don't have any solutions.
They
pretend that they are the party of fiscal responsibility, and they demonstrate the contrary every time we give them a chance.
So all of this is true. All of this is accurate. But the thing that really gets my goat, which really, really shits me, is that every time these things come out, they say, oh, that's surprising.
What a surprise.
That's different to what we expected.
Another surprise.
Another surprise. Another $500 million hole. Another half, you know, $1.6 billion hole. It's, why are they constantly surprised by this?
Well, because they're completely inept. And they're, but what they're not surprised by is that they consistently get away with it. They're so balls out, these guys. They don't give a shit what we think because their popularity is so high. I've got a feeling they're going to stop smirking after the next election, though. But at that point, it might be too late to save our friggin' assets.
Mm. I don't think that. I wouldn't be surprised if they get back in again.
No, there's no. I just don't think there's any prospect of them forming a government after the next election.
The reason they'll get back in again is because Labour doesn't exist.
Well, that's true. But what happens if Cunliffe takes over? Now, there are some diehard Labourites who reckon that's a terrible thing. What's his name? From Economist, said that he'd hand in his membership if that happened. But honestly, your membership of what? Shearer is going to continue to kill the party, it seems to me. Well, he's done one smart thing, which was apparently abandoning their stupid fresh fruit and vegetable GST policy.
He's also said he's going to keep KiwiSaver on ice.
I don't see a problem with that.
Not KiwiSaver, Cullen Fund, sorry.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. But I mean, it also has said that the capital gains tax is still one of their things. I think the most important thing though is reversing National's stupid unaffordable tax. That's when everything went wrong. Our books were not exactly perfectly balanced because, you know, things are not beautiful in the world. But we wouldn't have had to destroy our entire government and sell off the friggin' family silver if we hadn't given us, you and me and the people on this chat, a tax cut that we didn't need. A tax cut that made fuck all difference to any of us.
All we needed was a jig in the thresholds.
We increased GST, which is fucking... I know that Bernard Hickey disagreed with me. It's regressive. It affects the poorest people the most. And he gave us, the people who can afford the most, a fucking tax cut that we didn't bloody need. And I'd just like to take a break from my ranting invective to thank Rick Shearer, shark lawyer from Lowndes Jordan, for joining us this week. It's been great having you on again.
No problem. Nice to be here.
And thanks for your legal advice that wasn't legal advice.
Exactly.
That's true. Yeah. Repeating that disclaimer.
Please do not rely on that.
Rick's here as a friend of the show and amateur. Nothing should be taken as professional advice.
Yeah, he didn't give advice to any of us or any of you. He just gave us some awesome, well-informed
and
opinion.
If I did, I'm sure you'd ignore it anyway.
Well, we'll ignore the bits we don't like.
Yeah. Good night, guys.
Good night.
Cheers, Rick.
See you next time. Bye.
Now, where was I? These motherfuckers!
No, they can't do Cunliffe because...
he's a genius.
Well, no, it would look... He is, but it would look...
He is so sharp.
They have to do it now, like as in today, next week, because if they leave it any longer, then it's going to be election time again and, you know...
His name sounds funny.
Cunliffe.
So that's, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
So that's good.
Yeah, I always translate it to whiff as well. Yeah.
Right.
I can't help it. It just happens in my head. I can't help it.
But yes, you're right, Morgan. What they've done is given us money and then made poor single mums pay for it.
Yeah.
And it's fucked. And students and, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're changing the student allowance so that now, basically,
you can't get
it's no longer going to be possible. Even a master's is pretty much out of reach now because they're changing the way that the time is calculated and they're reducing the amount of time
understand.
In which you can do it.
I just don't understand how their brains work.
It's not exactly knowledge wave to say that you can't get postgraduate degrees anymore in New Zealand unless you're rich.
It does seem almost like they are really going for New Zealand as a cheap labour source.
Yeah.
You know, get people into cheap jobs because... That's the only way to keep your benefit going.
And that's very Chicago school, isn't it?
Yeah.
And let's look at all the countries where the Chicago school of thought has worked really well. I will list them off. Let me get the Wikipedia. There's fucking none. It doesn't work.
Sorry, what's the Chicago school of thought? You've lost
me. The Keynesian free market stuff.
The invisible hand.
Yeah, the invisible hand. The trickle-down stuff.
Demand side, what is it?
Supply side.
Supply side economics. Yeah, there was a great piece over
it. It doesn't
said,
bloody
there,
work.
There's no single proven... No single research has proven anything to do with supply side working.
Now, it seems, intuitively, it seems to stand to reason. It's like, oh yeah, that sounds really good. It doesn't work! We've tried it. We've tried it for decades. The first place we tried it was Chile. And then they went on to have military dictatorship for the next 30 years. That's the only way they managed to even get it in there. Because of fucking Pinochet. It's been tried time and time again. The only places where they've been able to consistently do it for decades without, you know, pesky democracy getting in the way is military dictatorships. And we've got the fucking national government who are trying to do the same shit here. Well, you know, not quite as hardcore, but pretty fucking serious. Getting rid of all publicly owned assets is an important part of it.
Yeah.
Getting rid of employment protections, making the worker weak, and making corporations, you know, ultimate power.
I'd like to see the numbers run out as well. Like this minor stuff about forcing women back into work if their baby is one because they've had another baby while on the benefit. What does that actually do? I reckon we're talking tens, maybe 20 millions. It's not hundreds and billions, is it, that it saves by doing this? It's so...
It saves nothing.
Who does it affect?
One second.
Corrections.
I said Keynesians, and as it's been pointed out, it's the Friedmanites.
Right.
Yeah. My bad. Excuse me.
So how is Friedman different to Keynes?
I'm not an economist. Maybe we need to have another one on to actually give us all of the finer points of it. Well,
who would we get on for that?
Well, there's an obvious choice. Maybe someone new. That'd be nice. Maybe we could try someone new. I don't know. So anyway, you're talking about the changes to requiring solo mothers to get back into work when their child is how old? Is it
5? But if they have another child while in the benefit, they have to get back into work before when that child is 1.
Right.
So basically, don't have kids on the benefit. But the funny thing is, that takes 2 people to have a kid.
Yes, it does, doesn't it?
And they punish the woman.
Well, that's the one you can.
They don't punish women, they punish sluts. Should have kept your vagina closed.
The bigger issue there is, where are the jobs?
Yeah.
Like, it's all well and good.
Jobs are in childcare, darling.
But where do you get jobs for people who have children?
Childcare, because all these people are going to have to go back to work. So there's going to be a boom in childcare jobs of women looking after their own children.
I guess so.
There was a good point someone made about this. I can't remember who it was, so I should really attribute them, but I'm not going to. That this implicitly, right, that forcing women back into work and then giving them money for childcare implicitly says that mothering is a valuable job because they're paying them for childcare.
Yeah.
So why the fuck don't just let them mother?
Yeah.
Let them be mothers.
When you look at the cost of childcare, and this is something we've actually spoken with Dylan before about, the cost of childcare is more often than many of these women can actually even earn.
Yeah. Well, it's more because there's no fucking jobs out there. Yeah. Show me the jobs.
Well, maybe this is a job creation scheme. This is going to employ all those women as childcarers.
I said that.
That's the gist of it.
My bad.
Has recently had a baby and she's going to go back to work. She was looking at a
I wasn't listening.
Job.
I was shouting.
It doesn't matter. She was looking at a part-time job and it turns out that it's completely impractical for her to have a part-time job in terms of what she earns versus what she pays in child support. Or, you know, child support and
so what happens? What happens if she doesn't get a job and her child turns 5? What happens there?
Well, she's not a single mum, but she, you know, her partner's working, and they need more money, so she's looking. So she's going to go to full time work, and they're going to put the child in daycare because that's, you know, the only option.
All right, we've got 2 minutes to get through a lot of stories. So what I propose is that we blat through real fast. And have a little bit of time in the overflow this week.
Let's do what's your auntie talking about.
What's your auntie been talking about?
What's your auntie been talking about?
What she's actually been talking about is not even something that she's sending, but this is about Netflix, who are considering reviving Jericho, which I don't know if you recall, but that was cancelled donkeys years ago.
They've done it with a few shows, haven't they?
There was a massive campaign called the Peanuts one. Nuts to get it uncancelled after the first season because it ended on a real cliffhanger. That campaign actually worked, and it was in like 2006, 2007, something like that. That campaign worked after they sent tons, literally, actual tons and tons and tons of peanuts. Thousands of people across the US sending peanuts to them. And they brought it back for another season. They got like a 6 or 12 episode season. It was brilliant. It was obvious that they had a smaller budget. This is Jericho. It's about a post-nuclear war it's a small town in middle America. It's survivors. It's the day after.
Netflix are bringing it back. Yay, Netflix.
Netflix are talking about bringing it back, and that would be really exciting.
I think Netflix is the future of television to some.
Hey, extent. Dylan.
Hey.
Discourse.co.nz/VPN.
Sounds expensive.
Let's open up the toot bag.
Let's open up the toot bag.
Do you think this time? Suyun-ku, at K. Suyun. I forgot today is Discourse Day. Never forget. Also, Hamish Campbell, at Polemic on Twitter. Oh, God, I'm listening to Discourse. At least I know I've hit rock bottom. Yeah, but are you also drinking alone? Because that's really what this show's about.
It's the true rock bottom.
Can I hardly even hear the tick, tick, tick. Thank you so much for listening. We're going to be in the overflow. We're going to do heaps of stuff in the overflow. So you should probably get it if you don't normally.
You're listening to the weekly show on Whisk.
See you in a minute.
Sorry. With course.
All right, we're using that one.